Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is a very special one for you.
It is, because a little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to hear from my roommate of 28 years. She's an executive consultant with IBM, but she's had a recent experience in another country that I think everybody's going to enjoy listening to.
I thought it was because we had another EOS person.
Didn't know what you were trying to tee up there. Yes, we're going to visit with him too. And we have Paula Washington back in the studio. It's been a while. We're going to catch up with her. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast certified EOS implementer with Curzon Group, Mr. Wayne Curzon. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic and really appreciate the invitation.
Well, Wayne, can you tell us a little bit about EOS? What does EOS stand for, first of all?
All right. Well, EOS stands for the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And what it is it's a business operating system. Sort of like Windows is an operating system on your laptop, it's an operating system to run a business. And it has a complete set of simple tools, a process. And really, the end result is when a company embraces it, get everyone 100% on the same page where you're at, where you're going, and executing really well and healthy, open, honest, transparent leadership team.
Now, how did this get started? Is this your thing, or this is kind of part of your organization?
So I will brag about it some because it's not mine. A guy named Gino Wickman, age 25, took over his father's real estate sales training business in Detroit. And he didn't realize it, but it was a turnaround situation. And he successfully turned it around. And he took the principles he learned in that turnaround, tested them 5 years as a consultant, and rolled out EOS, and that was about 17 years ago. And
There's been some books, right? I was familiar with him through some books he wrote.
Right. In fact, we just completed what we call the Traction Library. The textbook on EOS is a book called Traction. And then we have a book called Get a Grip, which is a story of a company implementing. And then we have a book called Rocket Fuel, which is how the two roles at the top of the organization, we call visionary and integrators, how they work together. We got a book called How to Be a Great Leader. And finally, What the Heck is EOS? And that's for everyone in a company using EOS.
And that's the latest book?
Yes, it is. And it's about 3 months old.
Right. And that should be maybe the first book you read out of those, or you recommend Traction first?
I think Traction is a good place to start.
So now, when did you become familiar with EOS, and when did you start becoming, are you an implementer right now?
Yes. So my background doesn't lend itself to be in the business advisory until you understand a little bit deeper. But I grew up on a farm in Ohio, went to Ohio State to avoid working on the farm, and then to avoid the Vietnam draft. I'm an old guy, I'm 70. But to avoid the Vietnam draft, I got an Air Force ROTC, ended up staying 20 years a pilot, commander, et cetera. Flew for Delta for 13 years, and then while I was an airline pilot, you know, we have time. And so I started a importing business, importing decorative brass drapery hardware. And the company that in Spain, when they said, okay, you're the exclusive distributor, they thought they'd be rich. And I figured I'd be on the cover of Inc. magazine. But we had 22-foot displays in the Home Depot Expo stores. And then approaching retirement, mandatory at Delta, I bought a business coaching franchise. I've been helping small businesses now for 15 years. About 5 years ago, I learned of EOS, and it was kind of the thing I was looking for. And in fact, I was on a website. 2 weeks later, I'm sitting in Detroit getting certified.
Now, why did this resonate with you so much? I mean, having been through, like, done so much yourself personally, why did you feel the need to say, you know what, I need this outside person with their operating system rather than the Curzon method?
Okay. So 5 years with a franchise, but then I was independent, and I was actually certified with a similar type business operating system. But when I learned of EOS, and what I was looking for is something I could, that was applicable to all of my clients, because without that, sometimes it tends to go into therapy and counseling. And also when you end your engagement, oftentimes the company kind of falls back to where they were. And so with EOS, they were learning a principle or learning to use tools that actually became part of the DNA of actually of the leadership team. So it had a lasting effect. And the cool thing about it is we're not there to create dependency. We're there to help them graduate. So we operate with no contract, no prepayments. We just schedule our sessions. And if they think they got the value, they pay. So,
and then they have, and then there's an end point though. It's like you said, it's not one of these consulting for life gigs.
Absolutely, right? Not. We only help as long as they feel like they need it. So some will say, you know, it's 18 to 24 months, and others just like a third party running their leadership meetings. And so those, some of those are, I think Gino has some that are 8 or 9 years old. So, yeah.
But the guts of it to kind of implement the operating system only takes a couple of years, right?
Well, we start out with 3 1-day sessions, 30 days apart. First month, or first 3 months, a session each month. And at the end of that, they have what we call mastered the 5 foundational tools. There's about 30 tools, 20 most companies will use, but they've mastered those.
And what are those 5 kind of pillars of the...
Well, the first one we call an accountability chart, which is a organizational chart on steroids. It really functions, or it's heavily dependent and focuses on the function of each seat that we define in that chart. And then the second one is what we call ROCs. ROCs are the 90-day priorities that are written as SMART goals, but the 90-day priorities for the company, and we live in a 90-day world. Then there's a meeting rhythm, which is the center of the universe here is a weekly, what we call level 10 meeting. It's 90 minutes long. We call it level 10 because we rate ourselves at the end, sort of like the Olympics. Then there's a scorecard. And is that, that's 4, right? So what am I forgetting? I'll think of it in a minute.
But so you work through those 5 things. At first, you start off with a 90-minute kind of an intro to the whole premise, right?
Oh, that's correct. So if someone is interested in seeing if they feel like it's a good fit, we do what we call a 90-minute discovery meeting. Mm-hmm. And that's with the leadership team. And so it's kind of like, is this something that we think will work? And do we want to work with Wayne? That kind of thing.
Right. It's kind of to determine if there's a fit for both sides.
Correct.
And that's where you kind of give the overview and explain that it is a 90-day world and that you're going to be held accountable, right? Like at that point, you tell them, look, if I'm not providing value, this is probably not going to work out, right?
Right. So we explain exactly how it works so they can get a feel as to how it would work with them. And that's true. I mean, it's we're not there to take their money if they're not going to
get any value.
Exactly.
Now, and to the point of it, isn't that first 90-minute kind of discovery meeting, is that no charge? Or is
that's free.
That's just to kind of see if it's a fit.
Correct.
And you're giving them a lot of value.
Absolutely. It makes them think about a lot of questions that maybe they hadn't thought about. And they hear the other input from the other members of leadership team and go, well, I didn't know you thought that way.
But it's probably hard to get them all to sit around the table, right?
Well, that's if they're interested, they're going to get them all around the table.
Right. And if it's that important to them, it'll make it a priority.
Yeah.
Now, what does that target company look like for you? What is the kind of the makeup of them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our sweet spot is a company with 10 to 250 employees and leadership that still wants more. It's usually a very good company, mm-hmm. but they still want more of something. We're not a turnaround thing. We're not a startup thing, but it's a company. And typically the owners are involved in some kind of development program, like say a peer-to-peer group like Vistage or Convene or something of that nature. I mean, it just shows that they have a desire to get better and they don't think they know everything.
And they might be coachable.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then are they having a certain pain where EOS starts making sense? Have they plateaued or maybe they're frustrated with last quarter's earnings or?
Yeah. So it seems like the typical frustrations fall into a couple categories. One is just not feeling in control. Maybe they're waking up at night or taking their work home with them, just not really feeling comfortable and in control. Second one is lack of profit. consider the time invested, the risk, all of that. The employees might be being paid pretty well, but you know, the owner's just not getting all they want. The third one is a big surprise, and that is, in fact, 82.4% say we're not getting all we want from our people.
Oh, really?
So, and sometimes you can almost look at EOS as a human capital management system. But when I say not from getting everything you want from the people, that could be everything from a lack of accountability, wrong people, wrong seats, or tension. Tension on a leadership team, tension between partners, and I know it's hard to believe, but tension between family members in the business. Another one is basically it's hitting the ceiling. A natural phenomenon, companies don't grow in a straight line, they hit a ceiling. And you just can't quite figure out how. And so EOS is phenomenal in just breaking through the ceiling or avoiding it. And then the last one is they're just tired of flavor of the month, especially if you got a high visionary person at the top, they're introducing something new every week. And they're just getting sick and tired of trying something new. And sometimes they paid a lot of money for consultant. When the consultant leaves, there's just not much impact. So those are the kind of the five frustrations.
Now, this visionary implementer or what is the integrator, what is the I?
Okay. So one of the things that Gino really clarified is that at the top of an organization, there's really two distinct roles, often being filled by one person. But those distinct roles are one we call visionary, and that's someone who's got 20 ideas a week, 19 aren't very good, but one's a game changer. they're usually very good with big relationships, they're good with sales, they're good with solving big problems. They're usually kind of emotional, little ADD is not uncommon. But that day-to-day stuff is just too boring, and they're not good at it. So the integrator is the is a person who's less emotional. They're more, they just love getting stuff done, and they love to get people working together and all that. So the integrator really ends up running the business. So visionaries are typically the owner. So we're really trying to get that owner out of the day-to-day business and let them go out and shake hands and build the business and make it rain.
And then the integrator is the one that's implementing the process and kind of making sure the trains run on time.
Right. The integrator role is really primarily to remove obstacles so that the other divisional areas can get their work done. But they're responsible for the business plan, really executing the vision. Mm-hmm. So once the leadership team comes together and figures out what the vision is, then they execute it and they put their hands up when the visionary is trying to integrate or implement something new in the middle of the quarter, and say, "No, wait a minute, boss, we're on this path for this quarter." So,
and then is that when you kind of explain that? Is that eye-opening for some teams where they didn't realize that those two roles are so important?
Absolutely. I think it's probably, in my 15 years of helping businesses, I'd say that's one of the biggest aha moments. And, you know, sometimes all you need is one personnel change for the year, and it's the game changer. And that's typically is that, but it could be some of the other positions.
So now when you bring this to their attention and they have that aha moment, do you help them kind of transition through the change that's necessary in order to kind of make that a reality?
So we're facilitators. And so we define the context of what we're doing, and then we define what it is. And so in building that accountability chart, we start with, we got a visionary at the top, then an integrator. And then there's three functional areas in every business: sales and marketing, get the customer, operations, serve the customer, and then finance, track the money. So we actually create a ideal structure without thinking about who's already in the company. So we create that ideal structure, and then we determine what are the five key roles of each of those seats or boxes, if you will. And then, and we've done that and thinking it like 6 to 12 months out. And then now we're going to put the people from the organization into those seats that we think best fill them. And so,
and you might be in more than one box at the beginning,
yes,
right?
Especially if you're small. Oh yeah. Right. In fact, sometimes the visionary is the sales and marketing guy and the finance person, and hopefully not the operations too, but yeah. But I mean, I've had a company with 40 million and it's two guys in all those seats. So yeah. But so that's all part of awareness. And with the awareness, and what we're really trying to do is get everyone in a seat where they're in their, what we call unique ability, where they're doing the stuff they like and love.
Their superpower.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And lots of times you got something that you don't like doing, but there's somebody else that actually would like doing that. So right. Now it's moving them or the particular role.
Now, when you're working with them, have you learned yourself since you're going through this and use the EOS for your own Curzon group?
Sure do. In fact, and I'm a solopreneur with a really outstanding personal assistant, lives in Florida. I've never met her, but we work very well and we use the tools because they work. So particularly this weekly level 10 meeting, which has a very distinct agenda, and it's magical almost. It many times, in fact, I would say when I begin working with a client after about 3 months, I say, what's working? They will always, always, always say that level 10 meeting. For the first time, we're actually talking to each other when the left hand knows where the right hand is, and we're looking at scorecards and we're figuring out what our problems are, and then more importantly, we're solving them. So
can you just briefly tell us like kind of the highlights of a level 10 meeting? Like what does that look like?
Sure. So it's 90 minutes long, and number one, it's the same day, same time, starts on time, ends on time, and follows the agenda. And the agenda goes like this.
So that makes it unique by itself.
Right.
Just the fact that those things happen.
Exactly. And sometimes that takes a while to actually get that to really happen. The first item is a check-in. And this is where we go around the table and share rather quickly what's one good thing personal, one good thing professional that's happened since we last met. And that does two things. Number one, it helps you learn what's going on in other people's lives. But it also, it's sort of like it flips a switch in your head. Hey, I am now working on the business, not in the business. I'm now going to be a board of directors. Then the next thing is to look at a scorecard. So we define a very relevant scorecard, 5 to 15 numbers. And what we're looking for there is the scorecard has goals. And if we're not hitting the goals, then is there an issue there? And what's kind of unique about this is in the first one third of the meeting, we're actually reporting and looking for issues, and we don't discuss or solve the issues until the last part of the meeting. So we find something wrong in the scorecard, we put it on our issue list to solve later. Then we look at the ROC, so the 3 to 7 priorities that we have for the quarter, whoever owns them, we just read the ROC, and the person says, I'm on target or I'm not on target to get it done. You're not on target. Sounds like maybe there's an issue. We'll put in the issue list. Then we go to people headlines. And this is good and bad news about employees and customers. So it covers a lot of stuff. If you screwed up with your best customer last week, you know, that's going to come up here. And again, we identify the issue and put it on the
issue. So you're not necessarily trying to solve anything at this point. You're just kind of keeping track of everything.
In fact, we don't want to solve anything because we're in a mindset here of identifying problems. And if someone wants to start talking, anyone in the group can just say, tangent alert.
Tangent, that means you're going off.
Yeah, you're going, yeah, okay. Let's get back on track here. And each of these sections, by the way, are only 5 minutes long.
Right, so you're just quickly getting the headlines of everything.
Correct.
Just like USA Today.
Yeah.
Right? You're not kind of digging in deep. You're just getting the headlines for the week.
And
you can then kind of say, okay, let's go to at a future meeting or at a different time, we're going to kind of dig in deep on that one.
So we're mining for issues. Uh-huh. Issues are obstacles, problems, or it could be opportunities. Then the next one is a to-do list that was created last week. And what we're going to do is read the to-dos, and each one is owned by someone, and the person who owns it either says done or not done, and we don't want to hear whining about 95%. So it's done or not done, and then we score ourselves. So we had 10 to-dos, and we got 9 done for 90%, and that's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 25 minutes in there.
So that score then is based on the to-dos. So
yes.
It's either did it or didn't. It's a binary operation, right?
Yeah.
And then your score at the end is based on how many were completed.
Well, the to-do score is based on right. So that's where you bake in the accountability,
right.
And you you want people to feel like if they didn't get it done, they're kind of letting the team down.
Right.
So that's 25 minutes. Now we get 60 minutes for solving issues. And so.
Oh, so now at some point you do solve.
Oh, yes. That's the most important part. So we spent 25 minutes mining for issues. And now we're going to spend 60 minutes roughly solving those issues. So we built this list of issues. And the first thing we do is we determine what are the top three issues. And we number them 1, 2, 3, take about 30 seconds. And then we have a very interesting, seems overly simplistic, but phenomenally powerful way of solving issues. So to solve an issue, the first is called IDS, identify, discuss, and solve. So the first thing is to identify. Now, what happens in most cases, though, is people jump right into discussing, and they discuss, and they discuss, and they discuss, and finally go, shoot, we're out of time. So, the most important thing here really is to identify what's the issue. What is the real issue? Ask why. And then when we discuss, our rules of the game are we want everyone's opinion, but we only want it once. And if someone goes on a rabbit trail, it's a tangent, coming up with solutions. And so I got a great story. Horst Schulze, the former CEO of Ritz, talks about when they opened up the Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead, they immediately started getting complaints about room service. And so he's a German, thick accent. I was listening to him on a podcast. So he calls up, you know, room service, hey, fix it, you know. Well, a little time goes on and still getting complaints. And so he goes down to the kitchen. What's going on here? You know, and they say, well, boss, we're following the procedures, but we get to the elevator. We got to wait on the elevator. So picks up the phone to engineering. Hey, engineering, what's going on here? And they say, it's all working good. 160 mm-hmm. seconds, top to bottom. So someone in the kitchen grabs a chair and sits on the elevator. And here's what happened. The elevator would go to the second floor where they did the laundry. They'd prop the door open, load on all the clean linens, go to the next floor, prop the door open, clean linens off, dirty linens on. And so, you know, he goes like, hey, come, why are we doing this? This is when people are checking out. And they say, well, the reason we're doing it is we only have two sets of sheets. If we had three sets, we wouldn't have to do it this way. And well, why do you only have two sets? Well, boss, when we opened up, you told us to get rid of the third set. So the point here is that room service, sucked because we only had two sets of sheets. Getting to the point is you got to identify
what the
root cause is, right? So.
Well, and that's the stuff you get when you go through the EOS process. That's fantastic story and great. I love the EOS system. It just makes so much sense for entrepreneurs of any size. But again, your target is 10 to 250 employees.
Yeah. And we have million employee companies, and right. We have some two or three. But that's a sweet spot where you get the biggest.
Now, if somebody wanted to go learn more, maybe go through that 90-minute free discovery conversation, where do they get a hold of you?
Okay. My website is the Curzon Group, and that's spelled KURZEN.com. KURZEN.com. I'm also, you can look up Wayne Curzon on LinkedIn. And my phone number, my cell phone number is 678-362-7734.
All right. Well, Wayne, thanks for coming down and visiting with us, man.
It was fun.
Yeah. And I'm like Lee, I'm a big fan of what I've learned so far about the EOS system. Before we wrap, I did have a question about the whole sales and marketing thing for you. Mm-hmm. Do you get referred in or does the EOS system send you prospective clients? How do you build your book of business?
Don't we wish it was the latter? So, prospects, or we call them warm leads. They come from several places. Initially, for me, it was pretty much networking, and then it became really referrals from clients.
Nothing sells like good work, right?
And I also do quite a bit of speaking, and I get a lot of clients from speaking, and they end up being all over the country. That part I wish wasn't true because. Everything's done in a one-day session, and so you got to go out the day before and get home at midnight the night of the session. But so it's speaking, referrals, networking with what we call connectors, and And then we do get some from the company.
Well, it's absolutely clear. And I know they can hear it through the airwaves. You just drip with enthusiasm. You really love what you do.
I do.
Don't you?
You know, everyone, I think we have two basic needs: to be loved and be significant. And I think our significance often comes from making a difference. And I know that I'm making a difference. The EOS life goes like this: do what you love with the people you love. Make a huge difference, be appropriately compensated with time for other passions.
Wow.
And I'm helping leadership teams get that in their own life.
I believe it. Well, yes, thanks again. One more time, best way for folks to reach out, have a conversation with you or someone on your team about this.
Okay. Website,
phone number, whatever's appropriate.
So my cell phone is 678-362-7734. My website is The Curzon Group. It's actually just Curzon Group. It's K-U-R-Z-E-N Group, G-R-O-U-P.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Wayne Curzon.
All right. So if you're listening in, reach out to Wayne and have a conversation about this. Even just a conversation with Wayne, I think, would help you get on the right track. So, yeah, thanks again, man.
You bet. It's my pleasure.
Hey, how about staying with us? We got a couple more guests we're going to visit with.
Love to. Waiting to hear about them.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce executive consultant with a little company some of you may have heard of called IBM. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Holly Payton. Good morning.
Hello.
It is good to have you in the studio. What'd you learn in that last segment?
Well, I took a lot of notes, that's for sure. And I definitely need to get the book Traction so that I can get more information.
Well, you're here today to talk about IBM's Corporate Service Corps. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. IBM has a program called Corporate Service Corps. They started it in 2008, so it's about 10 years old. And what this program is they select people, 12 to 15 consultants from around the world, who come together and are sent to an emerging part of the world to work on projects all pro bono for 30 days.
And then how is it decided what part of the world and what projects to work on?
That's very interesting. IBM partners with other NGOs that work locally in different parts of the world, in India, in China, in Morocco, in parts, you know, countries in South America, et cetera. And typically the NGO, that partner NGO is meeting with different government agencies or small businesses or other NGOs to determine the best fit for the people who are available and something that can be done in 30 days.
So the objective is to have it completed. So it's not just, oh, we're going to help and then we leave and they still have needs. This is to accomplish some concrete objective.
Yes, some finite piece of work. We partnered for the trip that I went on. We partnered with Pixera Global, based out of Washington, but they have local people in Mumbai.
And then what was the project you were accomplishing?
So there were 13 of us from 8 different countries. And
they're all IBM.
And they're all IBM. And it's, as you can imagine, there's over 400,000 employees in IBM. So to be selected is a very big deal. A friend of mine said, you know, it's easier to get into Harvard than it is to be selected for CSC. So you absolutely have to go. We went to Mumbai for 30 days and we worked on 4 different projects. There were 3 people per project. One project had 4 people. The project that, and they were all in the education industry. It was the first time that CSC had ever chosen one industry to have everybody work on. And at the end, we said to IBM, you really need to do this again, because it was so wonderful for us to have a view of all the things that everybody else was learning in their projects, that you came away with a broader, richer understanding of the education industry in India. So my project. My project was working with the Kaivalya Education Foundation. It was started about 10 years ago, and it was dedicated to bringing leadership skills to the schools. Here was something that was I thought was very...
So the school administrators or school actual, the teachers, the boots on the ground?
Right. It is for the administrators, but it's also for the teachers as well. So here's the thing that was the gap that created this need. In India, if you want to be a teacher, you can go to college for that. If you want to be a headmaster or a principal or a government official in education, there's no training. There's no higher education for that. So you're a really good teacher. You get named the principal of the school. It's like taking a really good manager at a plant and saying, okay, you're going to be the plant manager and you're going to run everything. As a school headmaster, it's like running a small business. You have a budget. You have to
create. Right, those are different skills.
Absolutely. You have to keep teamwork. You have to focus on curriculum. You have to fill out all the forms that the government want, et cetera. So this organization was dedicated to bringing leadership skills and those kinds of programs to schools. And they're very successful. The way they do it is they leverage what's called Gandhi Fellows. This is a Gandhi Fellowship program. It's 2 years. It's young people that are fresh out of college, and they sign up to be a Gandhi Fellow. And what you do is you visit one school every day, so five schools a week. So you shepherd five schools over 2 years. They have a proven track record with their program of improving student learning outcomes by 18%. But it doesn't scale.
Right.
As you can imagine, it's one-to-one and it doesn't scale. So
they're not leaning on technology, or this is all in person, physically going around India, which is a kind of a large place.
it's a large place. They have programs at the district level, which of course you can have a broader impact because you would impact all the schools in the district, but still Gandhi Fellows one-on-one. So the project that they engaged IBM for was to come in and make recommendations on how they could stand up a virtual field support center so that
they open their mind to the fact of we want to leverage technology.
Correct.
So they're thinking of a Gandhi/Watson solution. That's what it sounds like.
I don't know that Watson would be involved quite yet, but this would be where teachers, headmasters, parents, district officials, and the Gandhi Fellows themselves had a place to call to get an answer rather than a teacher has a question. Now I have to wait a week for the guy to come back.
And then maybe not a week, it could be longer.
Exactly, exactly. So we came in and it was the standard consulting approach. We interviewed over 50 people.
When you say people, who were the people? Were they the fellows? Were they the teachers? Were they or all of them?
All of them. We interviewed groups of Gandhi Fellows. We visited schools, we met with headmasters, we met with teachers and parents.
And what were you asking them? Like, what are you asking the fellow? Are you asking them, how can we scale this? Or are you just kind of getting a feel for what they're doing?
All of the above.
What they think's working?
We asked them what's working and what's not. We asked them the success that they have. What are their challenges? We asked them, if you had a virtual support center, what are the types of services that they could offer that would help you? What are the questions you might have that they would need to answer? So we asked the gamut. And we did the same with the government officials.
So you asked each of the constituents who are using this.
Yes. What are your priorities? What are your challenges?
Did you ask the parents and the kids?
We didn't ask the children. We did visit with some parents. Of course, all this was through interpreters. We right. did visit with some of the parents and ask them similar questions as well.
So then how much of your time, because you're on a clock here.
Yes. Oh my gosh, the stress. So you gather the data, you document your findings, and we did that for about the first week and a half to 2 weeks. We documented or we gathered all our data, we documented our findings. We synthesized, we aggregated what we heard into themes, and then you start building what your recommendations are. So in the third week, we started to have playbacks with the clients and with executives within.
So you had to get something to the point where you can test it to some degree, right?
No, we were for our project, we were not able to do that. Some of the other teams were able to build a piece of technology but that wasn't the case for the project that we were on. We left them with recommendations on the services that this virtual field support center would offer, the technology that they would need to implement. We visited, they have a field support center, but it's not doing this work right now. And so we analyzed their technology and their servers and so on. So the technology that they would need to implement, gave them architectural diagrams and et cetera. And the skills that the people would need to have in order to do this type of work, we gave them recommendations on the processes and process improvement. And they didn't ask for this, but we gave them recommendations on branding and awareness. So we left them with an outline and all the detail we could muster, put into the documents, as well as tools that we used, a cost benefit analysis spreadsheet that we built for them and so on and so forth.
So now you leave. Now is someone following up, holding them accountable, or is that like, well, our work is done. Now I have my real job to worry about.
They are on their own, and I do keep in touch with them. Our team was made for this project. We had myself, Holly Takamura from Washington, D.C., and Yang Yang from China. So our team was Holly, Holly, Yang, Yang. And
sounds delicious.
And the three of us keep in touch with the client and are very, very excited about the progress that they're making.
So they are making progress.
Yes, they are making progress. They've today's the end of January, so they should have closed on the decision of the software package that they would be implementing. They have already started delivering some of the training that we recommended. They are visiting different support centers of different companies, and we were able to arrange for a visit to an IBM support center in Pune, just outside of Mumbai. I think they're actually going to go visit another one just outside of Delhi. So I touch base with, the three of us touch base with them about every 2 to 3 weeks, and they know that they can certainly schedule meetings and so on.
So now, at the end of the day, for yourself to have gone through this experience, what has it done? Maybe to alter the way you think about things and how fast you can execute something? And
It was an amazing experience. I have to say, I have never felt so alive for 30 days. And the reason I say that is because I'd never been to India before. So you were in a new place, new modes of transportation, new food, new people, new hotel, new clients, everything. So you're on high alert. Your senses were on high alert. And that was such a magnificent experience and a wonderful feeling that when you come back, you want to pursue new things. It's very rejuvenating. And sure, you want to pursue new things so that you continue to feel that way.
What about the impact? Did you feel that in that short period of time, you made an impact that was maybe larger than you anticipated?
You know, I was very impressed with the impact that all of the four teams could have. I didn't have any expectations because I didn't really know what we were going to be able to do in 30 days.
You knew you were charged with trying to help.
Yes. You knew you were charged with trying to help. And you knew that you would help. But the idea that today, this organization has been able to reach about 12 to 1,500 schools. And that if they implemented this, there's no hard statistics on exactly how many public schools there are in India, but I know it's over 7 million. And that if they were able to implement this and have a virtual support center where people could get those questions, then the reach, the way you would be able to impact so many more schools than just 1,500.
Right. I mean, you're going from amazing. Thousands to millions.
Yes.
And so that's a tremendous impact in a short period of time to at least, you know, knock over that first domino.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it was a wonderful, wonderful feeling.
Now, what about now you go back to the real world here and you see your work and you're trying to impact people. And then maybe, I mean, you tell me if the scope of your work here is that impactful.
Some days, yes. And some days, no. I can remember sitting at the table on that last day and we were debriefing.
Right.
The 30 days with the lead from Pikesera Global. And I sat there and I looked around the table and I said, I wonder if every CSC team at the end thinks, wow, I got to get something more interesting to do when I go back home. Because you felt so
alive. Well, that's why IBM only sends a handful of people. they don't want to scale this.
and yes, I think we all felt as though, wow, I want to make sure that I am continuing to do interesting work as well as have a big impact. And so many people, when they come back, they keep the same job, they do the same thing, but they find other avenues to support other public programs, perhaps within their own
right.
hometown. And so...
Now, yeah. How appreciative were the people that you were working with in India? When you left, were they sad to see you go?
Yes, very. But here's the thing. I figured, silly me, I figured that any company, group, they'd be thrilled to have a set of IBM consultants coming to...
They're coming to rescue us.
You know,
how awesome
to do this work pro bono. But the companies, and this was not unique to the organization I worked with. I found out later, this is pretty universal in the beginning. The companies are, it's only 30 days.
Right.
What can they do?
Let's focus on all the negative things about this instead of the positive things.
We're so complex. We're so unique.
They'll never understand.
Exactly. They'll never understand.
There's a lot of resistance.
The other piece is they viewed it as volunteerism. And their track record with using volunteers.
Is that a cultural thing?
I don't think so. I don't think so. There's a difference between the energy and effort often from volunteerism than from, you know, a job.
Right, where you pay someone to accomplish something.
And all the IBMers, this was an engagement like any other engagement.
Right, you were treating this
as
you were
under the gun.
This is my client.
Exactly, this is my client. So all of the clients were a little bit tentative about, we'll give this a try and see.
And
how
maybe
it goes.
They have some scar tissue, maybe
sure.
of other people trying to help
right.
that, you know, was more superficial.
So in the end, to a client, every single one of those four clients were so blown away.
So at some point that changed. Something changed. And then at the end, there's hugs and tears.
Absolutely. I feel, you know, at the final ceremony, each client stood up and talked, and I feel as though a member of my family's going away. And yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yes.
You don't get that every day.
No.
So now, is this something that for you, you mentioned that maybe now you're going to look for other opportunities to kind of recreate that feeling. Is there anything that maybe companies out there that are IBM-like can do you know, that they can learn from this, that they can implement some a program like this? Do you have any suggestions for them?
Well, it's interesting. I think when IBM started this 10 years ago, there weren't many programs like this.
Right.
Now, I do think that many large companies, whether it's 30 days in a spot or whether they pick local people, they might configure it differently. But a lot of big companies have something similar. The value for IBM to do this, and I share this so that as companies think about it, they might feel the same way. IBM has always said this program has a triple benefit. The first benefit is obviously for the companies that are getting the effort of the people, the right. IBMers coming. The second benefit is the leadership skills that are developed in the team that goes.
Right.
Because there is no leader in a CSC team. And when you form a small team, Holly, Holly, Yang, Yang, there's no leader there. You guys have to work together to figure it out and right. leverage all your skills and so
there's
on.
There's not a playbook. You're kind of right. making it up as you go.
As you go along. And then the third benefit is that IBM gets its name out in places that might not recognize what IBM is.
Well, I'll say there's a fourth benefit in that each of you comes back to your own community with these skills and experiences and impacts their families and the lives around them by having gone through this.
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
So for you, this is something that you're going to keep track of these people for a while.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
They're part of your family now. And then is there a way for organizations that are out there in the world to reach out to IBM to kind of get on the list of areas that they'll pay attention to and maybe help? How does that work?
The easiest way to find out more about the Corporate Service Corps is to go to IBM.com and search Corporate Service Corps. Mm-hmm. There is a longer URL, which I will share. But like I said, the easiest way is go to IBM.com and search Corporate Service Corps. But if you go to IBM.com/IBM/responsibility/Corporate Service Corps, you will find all the
information.
It'll
be right there.
It'll be right there. You'll find all the information that you might want.
Or just ask Watson. Watson will put you right on it, right?
Right. Watson, what's Corporate Service Corps?
Now, I understand that you also, though, kept a journal. And, of course, you did it the IBM way. You did a blog. You kept track of what you were doing while you were there real time. Is that something you're going to keep up with or make available to your circle or maybe even anyone else that wants to really learn about your journey?
I didn't share the blog widely. I shared it with family and friends because I wanted to have the chance to speak from the heart, which isn't always socially acceptable.
Okay, so not for public consumption.
Not for public consumption.
But it was good for you. That for you and those around you, that was part of the experience,
yes,
as well.
They encouraged every person to create a personal blog as well as have a team blog. And it was wonderful. And I actually read all of my blog posts last night preparing for today just to remember the feeling that went behind the words and what a magnificent experience it really was.
Yeah, well, I'm with Lee. I think all the benefits are important. I think number four is as big as any. I think that is fantastic. Thanks so much for coming and sharing your story. And I have to believe people who hear this story are going to be inspired, whether it's through this specific kind of path, they're going to be inspired to revisit their own personal commitment to serving in this fashion. And maybe they don't trek all over the world, you know. Maybe they head 5 miles down the street and try to help somebody out there. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and keep up the good work. Hey, hang out with us. We got one more guest we're going to visit with.
Okay.
All right. Okay, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
She's been very patient while we've been having these conversations. And I have the impression she's been very engaged. I think I saw her taking some notes. I saw her nod her head quite a bit. But please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, founder and executive coach with Paula Washington Enterprises, Miss Paula Washington. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am doing well. Did I read that right? Did you enjoy those segments and did you pick up some things?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, all of us as business leaders enjoy to hear other people's stories, their expertise, and the things that they've learned. Wow. When I was at IBM, they didn't have that program back in the 80s and the 90s. You know, we didn't get to go that far. You know, they sent us to Armonk. That was about it, you know, in New York. But love that. Love EOS. You know, I'm an entrepreneur at heart. As a child, my grandmother used to take us with her selling real estate and take us to the bank every week, which was wonderful. So, you know, you those stories, and then you look fast forward now where we are. It's incredible.
Well, can you talk about, Paula, how you're serving folks? What are you doing?
Well, I'm doing quite a few things. What I did was in around 2013, I had a health challenge. So I been in business in corporate America for about 20 years. And this year celebrates 40 years in business, 20 years in full-time entrepreneur. So I had to shut down for a while and take some time off. So I went back to school, got another master's, tested out a hypothesis, mm-hmm. and created Paula Washington Enterprises, which is a culmination of my life's work. All of my training, coaching, strategy sessions, speaker, books, programs, all of that in two programs. The Institute for Leadership Innovation, which is more for the corporate executive and business leader. The Design Your Life First Academy, which is for women who are transitioning out of corporate into their own businesses, or women who want to change their careers. You know, that encore career, once you reach a certain stage in life, you want to really do something with impact and make a difference. It might be that, you know, because of health or family or economics within the corporation you were working, downsize. How do you transition from that? So I've created those programs to actually train and mentor individuals to be able to do that, which I love. I have so much fun doing it.
So now you mentioned a lot of your clients are people that either have been part of the kind of a big corporation and are in some sort of a transition in their life so that they can kind of explore more of a doing their own thing. Are there any kind of common challenges that they all have of leaving something that is as secure and maybe known as the brand that they've been affiliated with for many years to now kind of relying on their own name and their own brand, which maybe isn't as strong today as it was, you know? Like someone's going to pick up the phone when Holly calls and say, I'm with IBM. But if she calls from Holly Payton and Associates, it might not be as easy to get clients.
Absolutely. Well, the three things is, number one, they're afraid of everything.
That a lot?
It doesn't even matter. Even in corporate America, I work with executives and they bring me in to work with teams and their individuals. And so whenever there's a change or a shift and the organization is going through something.
But that's rare, like in large companies, to have that kind of change, right? They're pretty stable.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I'll take that. But anyway, life is full of transitions. Mm-hmm. And so wherever you are, there is a transition. Fear is number one of the unknown. Will I be good enough or I'm not good enough? Or, you know, I don't have what they need or I do have what they need, but they may not like me. All of these little crazy idiosyncrasies we have from insecurity or what have you. The second thing is, okay, is my product good enough? And that goes back to their personal brand. When you've been in corporate for a very long time, you have a brand within that company, but you lose who you are.
Right.
And when I came out of IBM, Mobil Oil, McKinsey and Company, and all of those black, blue, and gray suits all the time, the one thing I loved when I got out of corporate was wearing color again and being myself, you know, and not being in that such of a box. Mm-hmm. So they're thinking of in the lines, in the box. They don't have a team now. What do we do? Wait a minute. You know, I used to have all of this budget. They want to set up all these elaborate mm-hmm. plans and, you know, spend all the, I'm like, wait a minute, you're spending all this money, but how are you going to make that back? You know, one of my clients recently, she says, oh, well, I'll just take it out of my, I said, how long are you going to take it out of your savings or your 401k or your this or that? You know, let's look at this reality. Well, you know, I can get everything set up and this is how we used to do it. I said, yeah, but you're not there. You're here. So let's start with a basic plan and get focused on your personal growth as a leader outside of a large organization where you have the support and security, and now you're dependent on yourself 100%.
But that's a mind shift, right?
Yes. That's where the entrepreneurial leadership mindset comes in. I created a tool for that, because to trust yourself again without anybody else's voice, without having a team where you could blame it on them if it didn't work, or hide behind somebody's door, now it's you 100%. And that is the most unnerving and uncomfortable place, but the best place for any person to be.
So now, for some people, do you find, you know what, they're better suited in that kind of corporate environment than they are being an entrepreneur? Or do you think you can take anybody from that corporate world and then kind of help them shift the mindset to be an entrepreneur?
I think what I've been successful in doing with individuals is helping them to see a broader picture and taking the best of what you've learned in corporate, because I wouldn't be where I am now without it. Mm-hmm. The discipline, the structure, the processes, you know, there's so many things that I learned in corporate. I would not be as good as I am today without it. Taking that and then the flexibility, the visionary, the creative, the flexibility of setting up your own schedule, doing business on your own terms, and all of these things that the entrepreneurial lifestyle brings, and putting them together and creating a process and a structure that works for you. Some people are good for franchise work. Some people are good for working within an entrepreneurial environment, but not carrying the vision. Mm-hmm. They're very enterprising, but don't give me the responsibility. I'm a visionary. You know, I can't, you know, if I were to go back in corporate now, they really wouldn't like me there.
You're unhirable.
I'm unhirable in that environment. Yeah. They love me to come in. I go in and work on projects.
And then you leave.
I leave. And I'm like, yes, you know, and stuff like that. And it's really good. But, you know, it just depends on that individual. And then it depends on the age of they are and the stage of life they're in. Mm-hmm. You know, that because ages and stages are extremely important when it comes to leadership. You know, for women, I say there's certain things you can't do at a certain stage in life. You've got teenagers or young children. Let's not get it twisted. You got to focus. Your primary energy is there. So if you're working in an employment opportunity and you're looking to be vice president of a division, you got to travel 80% of the time. That's not going to happen.
Right. Well, you got to decide, is that what's the most important thing?
Well, this is the whole thing. And so, but when you're looking at those decisions that women have to make, men have to make, it really primarily is focused from the family perspective at those stages of development where you're raising children and so forth and so on. Before the children or as they start to get older and on their way out, that's your time. That's when it's time for you to fly and have a great time.
But you can be planning for that.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not like you're waiting.
No. What I've done is I've created exit strategy programs for individuals who want to transition in 3, 5, and 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with several individuals to help them actually make that transition. There was one client I had. It was really interesting. She worked for a very large company here. And we had planned for our exit in 3 years. Well, that division was being shipped to another country, and she had to leave in 6 months. However, since we had structured the financial package and everything it was that she would require, when they asked her, she was ready.
Right. So now, when you're working with your clients, how important is it for them to kind of look at this offering that they're going to have? Right. They have to kind of get their arms around what is their service they're going to provide when they go out in the wild, right?
Right.
So do you help them kind of hone in on what their superpower is and what that's sellable?
Absolutely. There's a whole system that I have and a process that I have for each program. There's curriculum and things of that nature where we do an assessment. We do a personal assessment first. Then we do the professional side, what their competencies are and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. We look at what their ideas are because they got 50 ideas. One of them might be good. Because they have, well, I could do this and I could do that. And they want to do all this multitasking. I'm like, no, let's cancel all of that. Let's look at when you were young, what did you want to do? Let's go back there. Let's look at that individual because that's the person with the truth. All this other stuff is everything you've learned, everything you've picked up from other people.
And that might be clouding the vision.
It is clouding. It's also clouding their self-confidence. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in a corporate environment or when you're in any kind of institutional environment, you've been there for a long time. So everybody's voice is always, that's what you hear all the time.
Right.
So you never really hear your own voice. And so now you're outside, you're at home, or you rented a little office somewhere and there's nobody talking to you. And like, they're sitting there like, they're so glad to hear, talk to the coach or to go to a class or talk to somebody that can identify with them where they are, you know? And so what I do is I make sure I give them that foundation on the personal side, knowing their leadership style for where they are today in order to be able to lead that company. And then take that creativity they have and structure it into one direction. And later on, we can add on these other components. But right now, let's keep one direction. Let's maximize the budget that we currently have. And let's test market these products. How do we do that? Okay, you can do a lot of things for free and offering services and so forth, but I don't always recommend that. I recommend being able to build a blend of how you're going to offer and distribute. You know, of course, we have friends and resources and things of that nature. And so we do, I have a design your business niche where we do a complete analysis and they put all of their resources and everything inside of that one package and they can go to market and make money now.
Now, can you share a story? Maybe you don't have to name names, but somebody that maybe came to you with lots of ideas and maybe, like, for example, maybe they were an accountant and then you got to the heart of what really they their superpower was, and maybe now they're doing something that's not even related to what they initially came into.
Well, this is interesting. This is just a recent client I just had. She had been in the school systems for a very long time, and she was a very high-ranking veteran in the military. And she had all these ideas. She's going to do all this type of training and teaching. She's PhD, all these, all this wonderful stuff. And I said, well, how are you going to make money? Well, I'm going to do this because, you know, that. I was like, no, let's look at really, what do you really have to offer? Resiliency. She never thought about that. Mm-hmm. I said, because you were a captain in the military back in the day when women weren't that prevalent in the military. All right. And then you have been a principal. You've been in education, higher education on many, many levels as a professor and various other things. So your real focus is resiliency. So she created a program around that, and we took the military concepts and the dog tags and all of the military, you know, things, and she created these incredible ideas of training and mastermind groups and different things of that nature. So the whole other inspirational, whimsical, and all of this all over the place has now been focused in. And in the first 4 to 6 weeks, she got 2 major federal contracts. So,
and that, which is, you know, it's ending up being what you wanted to do, but not in the manner that she initially visualized it.
Yes.
And that's the value of a coach, right? Where
Absolutely.
You're able to open their mind to other possibilities and maybe you can see them in a different way they see themselves.
Absolutely. And be very clear and direct on staying focused with them and helping them stay focused and that they hear what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to bend just because that's what you want to hear. You know, I only work with people who are really serious. There's a joke among the coaches, and I know the other individuals will laugh with this, that it takes them about 3 to 4 weeks to start to tell you the truth. Mm. You know, and then they tell you the truth because they have to. But it's not because, you know, they want to keep that facade as long as they can. And then they start to tell you the truth. But the assessments don't lie. You know, they think the numbers mean one thing. They think this means something else, but actually it doesn't. And when they find that out, oh, wow, I can't hide over here. I can't hide over here. I might as well fess up, you know. And so that's how, you know, my experiences have been. And it's been such a joy. I love helping people, you know, improve or to realize their dreams and really get back to the truth of who they are and have fun at it. Make money, too, because, you know, it's fun to make money.
Right. Now, so you're... your target is the professional who had gone through some sort of corporation or large company and is now transitioning or is thinking about kind of the next stage of their life. Is that your sweet spot?
There's three. There's those in corporate. I work with teams and executives who are going to be promoted into C-suite or promoted into
other
areas.
So internally.
Internally.
Right.
And then externally, individuals who are looking to exit and they want another career.
Mm-hmm.
And then women in business. You know, the women in business program is just incredible.
And that could be women at any stage of business.
Any stage of business. I'm doing a luncheon next month called Empowering the Real You 2018. And then we'll be doing a big retreat down at Club Med in October for a weekend for the women in business. So that's like where my fun is. I get to have a lot of fun there and creativity and all that kind of stuff. And they get to have fun and do whatever they want. But the beautiful thing about all of the things that I've made is they're all integrated. The services are integrated. The processes are integrated. The programs that I've created, all of my training, I've been a trainer ever since I've been in corporate America. So all of that is integrated and builds upon each other at wherever, you, whatever stage of life you're at and your level of competency. You know, I love to deliver on a blended learning platform. I have a team of people that I can extend the same services for using other individuals and things of that nature. I love, you know, being on, you know, I'm a speaker by heart. I love to do it. So, you know, I'm out there just doing my thing and just enjoying people. And what I found now is I give more value now than I did in my earlier career because I really have something tangible because I live the full gambit. I've gone through all of like the health challenges, family challenges, death and different things that you've experienced with parents and, you know, all these different things that we do in life as a female. And then being part of a family that you have to be supportive and help out. I've looked at businesses that failed. I mean, every idea I had did not succeed. Okay. I did not make money at everything mm-hmm. I've done, but nonetheless, I make money now. Mm-hmm. So who cares? Right. You know, I've learned what's important. I learned what's, you know, the value of who I am as a person. And the passion that I have is real. So it, either it's your fragrant or it's not.
That's right. Yeah. And for you, the what's the best way to have that initial conversation? Is it through one of your books, going to one of your events, one of your speaking opportunities?
Well, the best way to reach me is paulawashington.com. There is a pop-up widget there that you can actually schedule a free consultation with me for 30 minutes. And that's the fastest way to get in touch with me.
But they're
online.
Not going to tell you the truth. It takes 30 days to get to the truth.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it takes. Well, they're going to say, listen, I got this idea and I know it works and I want to do this. And I want you to show me how to do X, Y, Z, 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 Z.
And you jump right on that, right?
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, really? Okay. Because I had one recently, an individual wanted to work with me. And she says, well, these are the things that I need to do. And she had this spreadsheet. She sent it to me. I'm like, why are you giving me this? We're not going to do anything on the sheet. Well, no, no, no. I spent the time. I had a coach before, but they wouldn't do what I told them. Oh, okay. All right. That's the problem right there.
Right.
Okay. So yes, paulawashington.com, 404-512-3371. You can reach me online. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. And
you're speaking,
available.
You have retreats, there's books.
Yes, I have eBooks. I've created actually I published 4 books, Time Mastery, How to Alleviate the Vampires of Life, Business and Relationships. Mm. And I have The Power of Relationships, The Power of Profitability. You know, that's with my course called The Power to Produce. You know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, you want an ROI on everything.
Absolutely.
And so I have Design Your Business Niche and Building Your Brand Momentum. So those are all on my website. They're on Amazon and they can reach me there with all of those books. And there are several, like the event we have in March, which will be here in Atlanta at Seasons 52. And that'll be a nice luncheon on a Saturday, March 10th. And that's exciting time to kind of reengage and see what we're doing for the new 2018. And to hear from all of the women and the people that have come through the programs and that are really cash flowing at high levels now. When I say they're cash, they're I was like, wow, I helped them do that. Like, really?
You know, you should raise your rates.
I know, right? I'm telling you. Because I was like, you know, and it's so good to see when people start to make money. Mm-hmm. Because now they really value it. And it's not so I'm rushing to get someplace quickly.
Right.
It's like, wow, if I didn't take the steps, I wouldn't have arrived. Right. You know, so those are things that, you know, I enjoy doing with individuals.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show. That's paulawashington.com for more information and the ways to get a hold of you.
Thank you.
All right, Stone. I guess the word of the day is impact. It seems like all of our guests today are making an impact.
It most certainly does. This has been fantastic. Don't you love doing this?
Yeah, this is the way we make an impact.
Yeah, no kidding. It just beats the heck out of working. This has been a blast. Thank you all.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. Our real producer, Katie Galley, and everybody here at the Business Radio X family saying, see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.